Yes, sailing on through the nighttime hours on our way to the proverbial midnight. Hopefully it'll be an awakening rather than, well, a continual and infinite state of unconsciousness. We'll be back with William Whitecloud, author of The Magician's Way and The Last Shaman, when we return in a couple of minutes here on Coast to Coast AM. John B. Weldon with you tonight with William Whitecloud, author of The Magician's Way. William, where can your book be obtained?
Well, it can be obtained in all good bookstores, your local bookstore, most probably Barnes & Noble, on Amazon, also on my website, williamwhitecloud.com. And also, I mean, if our listeners go to my website, the first chapter is available free on the website. And that actually contains the very core of the premises that we've been talking about tonight, the very core exposition of this secret to magic, which, as you said, isn't the magic in the sense of sorcery or the occult, but in the extraordinary approach to life, where, you know, you can learn about yourself, grow, contribute, make your life work really powerfully.
What else can you reveal about the little journey that you take through The Magician's Way without, you know, giving away the story?
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, we wouldn't be giving away the story for sure. And even if we discuss the premises, it's still a very worthwhile read and clarification on whatever we talk about here tonight. The central idea around the magic I'm talking about, which is just really an extension of our powerful creative nature, really, and the application and manifestation of that nature, and what it's capable of, is this idea that I presented, that rather than being process orientated as we usually are, it's about becoming end result orientated and shifting our orientation to becoming end result orientated and aware of and allowing ourselves to know and own what our heartfelt end results are, and through the acknowledgement of that and the holding of those end results, actually coming to an empowered way of seeing things in life and acting on things in life. So the whole idea that your focus creates your reality, whether you're focused on end results or whether you're focused on beliefs or processes, which often the processes will embody your belief system. So to be focused, to be end result focused rather than belief focused or process focused, is the essential premise of the whole model and also the book. But I think further to that, a really good thing to talk about is the idea that thoughts and feelings aren't real. It's the first secret of magic that we talk about. And I often get a very strong reaction to that, to say, what do you mean my thoughts and feelings aren't real? Are you saying I'm not having them, or that thoughts don't create reality? And it's not what I mean, actually, when we say thoughts and feelings aren't real. Yes, you do think and you do feel, and thoughts do create reality. But all I'm saying really is that thoughts and feelings are very subjective, and I guess the best way to put it is that thoughts and feelings don't have absolute integrity. They're not. Often we're in situations and we act in certain ways, driven by our thoughts and our feelings, because we think things and we feel things, and we just take for granted that what we think and feel is actually how it is, when really our thoughts and feelings are just reflecting to us our assumptions. And I'll just give you an idea. My son used to act in commercials. He's a good-looking young kid, and you know, he's also quite talented as an actor. And so I used to take him to auditions. And this one audition I took him to, I remember, there was a line of kids waiting to audition, and my son came out and just, you know, pumped the air with his fist, and he said, "Yeah, I'm going to get this part. I know I'm." And he was so pumped, and I just saw all the other kids immediately deflate and get blown away. And he walked out of there and you know, in the car on the drive home, he was so sure that he was going to get it. And yet he didn't get it. And it's just a classic case of, you know, his thoughts and feelings weren't real. He thought he did. He had an impression that it had gone well, and he was certain he was going to get the part. But it wasn't a reflection of actual reality. It was just a reflection of an assumption. And I myself have assumed many things, and sometimes it's coincided with what happens, and often it's not. In some cases, I've not believed something's going to happen. I've not had confidence that there'd be some eventuality. But it actually has turned out to happen in, you know, my favor. As opposed to what I felt and thought it was. So really, what it requires then is, when we're beginning to live our lives by magic, is to begin becoming end result orientated. But within that, when we start going for end results, thoughts and feelings come up one way or another, that reflect our assumptions about the end result, about the validity of the end result, of the possibility of the end result, etc. And then normally what tends to happen, because we've never been trained in the idea that our thoughts and feelings aren't necessarily real, is we begin acting according to those thoughts and feelings. They begin directing our behavior and our actions that very often inhibit the acquiring of that end result, the action towards the end result, the manifestation of that end result. And often, even our thoughts and feelings can you know, lead us to actually choosing end results that don't really have integrity, that don't arise really from our hearts, as it were, from our deeper inner values. And so, once you start working, a really important aspect of beginning to work with magic, beginning to work with end results, is in your strategic approach to life. Is to not be so emotionally based, is to, rather than, you know, just be driven blindly and react blindly to your thoughts and feelings, is have a capacity to be less reactive and sit back and notice what your thoughts and feelings are telling you. And, you know, actually when you do observe yourself, You really do have the tendency. We all have actually the ability to know. We are powerful, and we really actually do know whether our thoughts and feelings do have integrity, whether they actually reflect the truth of a situation, whether they reflect the truth of our hearts, and then, you know, we're not so blindly driven. We can take thoughtful, mindful action, and make mindful choices, and approach life in a much more empowered way. And as I say, you know, this is a very powerful principle, and one that is not really, not really covered that much.
You know, it sounds to me like what you're saying is that thoughts and feelings are actually like raw intelligence. I've discussed this a couple of times, but at length. These thoughts and feelings are rarely unambiguous. And so, how do you deal with, how do you deal with the possibility that fear, it could be fear of failure, it could even be fear of success, because there's an attendant responsibility that goes along with success, and many people self-sabotage themselves because what they want is less responsibility, not more. Now, how does that come into play as far as the philosophical approach to the magician's way? Fear. How much of that? How big a component in the as you observe the people who come to your seminars, the people that you speak with? Do you discern that it's a large, measurable percentage of the active, motivational input that directs their actions based on their thoughts and feelings? Do you find that fear is a large component?
Oh, absolutely. Fear's a huge component driving us when we operating unconsciously and even consciously. I mean, it's always a factor, and fear shows up in many ways that you wouldn't recognize it as fear. I mean, fear can show up as depression, and it can show up as anger. But back of it, most times or very, very often, is fear, and fear in one form or another is telling us that we're not viable, really. And as you said, there's the fear of failure. We're going to demonstrate that we're not that we're not capable, or that as you mentioned, that we might create attendant responsibilities, and then we have a fear of those responsibilities. So fear obviously plays a large part in our lives and drives us in ways that we aware of and oftentimes in ways that we're not really even aware of, because we operate often so automatically that we can even anticipate our fears so that we cut them off at the pass. We learn to operate in life in a way that we don't even go for things. Or don't even put ourselves in positions, or we run before we're going to get into perceived trouble. So we're ahead of ourselves and running away from our fears, reacting to our fears, and oftentimes, as I say, because of that, we're not even aware that fear is driving our lives, because we're just in some position where we've moved away from what we fear. Reacted to what we fear before what we fear can affect us even. So we don't even know oftentimes that it's manipulating us, really. And as I say, the thing is, it really does just go back to the awareness of these principles. To be aware of them is to be empowered by them. Where if you can know that an orientation of being love orientated, in other words, end result orientated, if you've begun to put the power in allowing, if you've begun to put the power in what you love, which means that you're now allowing to exist what you would want in your life, without knowing how it's going to happen or anything, but if you're allowing what you love to exist in your consciousness, and you also now aware that thoughts and feelings aren't real, you know, those concepts held consciously in your mind are now going to go to work. It's going to begin working on you magically. It's going to begin initiating your creative nature, your creative spirit, your natural ability, and you just kind of start becoming aware of your perception. You're going to become aware of more about your thoughts and feelings. And through that awareness, I mean, awareness really is key, because once you're aware, you then have choice. And the amazing thing about human beings, I find, is that when human beings are actually faced with true choices, and they're aware of what's going on in their consciousness, and what they're acting in favor of, and the choice to act in favor of that, or not to act in favor of it, human beings won't actually let themselves down. The more aware a person is of the consequences of their actions, of their behaviors, the more they will tend to do the right thing. I really have a huge belief in the power of the human spirit, and the power of the human spirit to do the right thing. And awareness just really allows people to begin acting powerfully in their lives.
You grew up in
strongly enough.
You grew up in Swaziland, yeah?
I did.
Now, do you have a wildebeest up there?
Plenty.
All right, let me ask you this. How much of this, of human behavior, the kind of human behavior that really you're trying to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and don't mess with Mr. Ambiguity. Now, when you see the wildebeest, all of a sudden, there are a bunch of them out there, and all of a sudden they just instantly change direction all at the same time.
Mm.
Do you find a similarity in human behavior? You know, the Jungian thing, the Carl Jungian thing, who said, we come from the collective whole and return to it upon death. Okay. Just extrapolating on that idea for a minute, do you find, well, this is indelicate, but do you find a herd mentality among humans, and does this herd mentality, once people embrace your philosophy your approach to life, do they disconnect from the herd mentality? But first, let's cover, do you think it exists, and does your magician's way enable people to talk about wandering around in search of a thought? Oh my God. But do you see what I'm getting at here? Is there a herd mentality, and does your training allow people to depart from it?
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah, sure.
Give me a longer answer than that.
Pardon?
Give me a longer answer than that, brother.
there is, of course, there's a herd mentality. And that's because people, you know, the nature of our rational faculty wants to know how it is. It assumes that there is a way it is, and it wants to know how it is. And so we collude in the way it is, and it's our nature to want to make an agreement on how it is and come to agreements. And we do that societally in groups, in families, or whatever. But you know, when you talk about the group mentality of the wildebeest, which I've observed over many years and very closely, it's not a herd mentality in a negative sense, because they're behaving very differently to us in a sense. They're behaving cohesively, where all of those wildebeests are. They have a herd mentality, but it's because they're connected, and they have a psychic connection. And when one knows something, all the rest of them know it, which is different to us. When we all know something, it's because we, learnt it all in a linear way.
Gotcha.
Not in the psychic way.
Let's take our break and come back with a couple of calls and some more comments with William Whitecloud, The Magician's Way, on Coast to Coast AM. That's right. He thought of those he angered. He was not a violent man. That's the whole thing, isn't it? It's keeping some balance in your life. And the thing is that it appears we need to be reminded of this as we go along. Otherwise, we start drifting into our old ways. And isn't it amazing when you're pulling out onto a, you want to get out onto a busy street. As long as you have that look on your face, like, I need to get out there, I want to go, no one will let you in. But if you sit there calmly and you appear patient and waiting, someone will let you in. Maybe what we're fighting against is ourselves. Well, that's deep, isn't it? And we'll explore that a little further with William Whitecloud, our guest this evening on Coast to Coast AM. We shall return. John B. Wilson with you tonight, and let's take another call, shall we? Wild One, Mark in D.C. Come up on the bridge and ask your question to William Whitecloud.
Hey, guys. Great show tonight, as usual. Just wanted to chat a little bit about sort of my success back in the 90s when I fell into discovering meditation and creative visualization and so forth. And my sort of angle on it, along with all the deep breathing exercises and the visualizations and the auras and so forth, and sending energy and healing environments with animals, all these sorts of things. My main thing that I, a couple key points. On the one hand, I was simultaneously reading the Shakti Gawain books and so forth, but also science books, things like the Tao of Physics about the quantum space, where science and magic meet is another one. So by combining the two, I felt like the combination of both the spiritual and the physical reality, while on the lines of what you were saying tonight, both the visualization is great, but it's then continuing to move and putting yourself sort of out there in an opportunity so the synchronicities can happen. I'm very into the science side of it, and by meditating sort of Yogananda style on the science side of things, the basis of, you know, the idea that everything is a vibrating string, effectively the entire universe, and that by, you know, that utter oneness of it, sending energy and intention, specifically saying send it when I wanted to send energy in a very focused, intense way, I found extremely positive effects. So hopefully you can comment on that. In addition, just briefly about the comment earlier about sort of negative individuals and people that come from sort of the dark arts, as they would be called. Definitely advice to everyone listening to this, as cliche as it sounds, just steer clear, because as positive as all those experiences were for me back then, it was simultaneous with the fact that I was living within a couple apartments over of a guy who was the nephew of the person who was mentioned when you were speaking before. Somebody who inherited a great deal of that power and negativity, and the effects on the entire neighborhood and everything that was going on around there were negative and extreme in association in certain ways. I don't want to be too esoteric, but suffice it to say, if people start talking to you about, hey, let's do the sort of the darker arts side of things, not the white light energy, but the dark, definite recommendation, steer clear. It's really not worth it. So if you could comment.
Well,
thanks, Mark.
Yeah, it's Mark, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. It's interesting what you say about the combination of science and magic. And, you know, in my experience, because what I heard you say, and, you know, please correct me if I'm not right, if I'm incorrect, but what I heard you saying was that in having a combination of the magic and the science, which means that in visualizing and being aware of, you know, holding your visions and putting into place the magic, as it were, the magic orientation, and also then understanding, having some understanding from a scientific point of view of, you know, how things work, as it were, it sort of amplified your power to manifest and to create. And in my experience, that can be useful. I really think from a point of view, really, more than anything, because there's some kind of assumption attached to it, is, well, there's some scientific validation, so there's some certainty behind this model that I can have confidence that I know it works. So there's some kind of trust, and you know, that'll always amplify anything. That'll always help. Is if someone believes in the efficacy of something, it will always work. I mean, we even know that where people are given placebos and they're told that this is, you've just been given some medicine now and this is going to work for you, it's going to heal you, and they're actually being given sugar or some water or something, that belief actually does help them heal. So there's definitely something in that, although in my experience, for myself, I do have to say that it's not necessary to understand how something works for there to be efficacy for things to work. Sometimes it can be actually a hindrance because it can cause you to become process orientated and need to know how things work and you know, have beliefs about how things work, and then, you know, when you believe that something works in a certain way and the conditions for that belief aren't present, and then you know, there's assumptions that it can't work. And there's no doubt that trust in some sense comes into play. And what's worked for me is really more just being very visualization orientated, being very end result orientated, and just relaxed in the assumption that it will manifest. And I think that those, to me, what it feels like, it's just the same. My trust is in some sense just the same as your trust. It's just that amplification through that trust that this will work, that it's going to happen, that gives it that power. And you know, if people get that amplification, they get that power through some sense of scientific validation, all well and good. And if they get it the way I get it, you know, through the trust of magic entirely, and that is, you don't have to know how it works, and that it will, then so be it. There is that efficacy created by the trust. What was the other point again? Just remind me, Mark.
Oh, I think he's gone.
Oh, has he?
I think Mark's gone. Do you incorporate any meditation or any of that in your or even a physical regimen to clarify your thoughts before you launch them out there? Or do you just go with the flow of life and just sort of maintain your desires as you go along? I mean, is there a mechanism for bringing yourself to a state where you can bring these things that you desire to you?
No, I don't actually meditate or have any physical practice to enhance my consciousness, as it were. I just find that in just practicing creating, being creatively active, gives me the state of mind. Anyway, it's, you know, I can summon it, the state of mind I need at will by just really letting go of what I'm thinking and feeling. And I suppose in some sense you can call that meditation, but it's not a meditation where I have to sit in any formal way and spend any time focusing on any mantra or anything like that, or detaching for a long period of time. I can come into the state of mind that I need practically instantaneously. And it's just really a function of creative practice, of being end result focused, and within that, just taking the power out of what I think and feel, letting go of what I'm thinking and feeling, and just being there with my end result focus. And that might not even mean actually having a specific end result, but just being empty in the moment to receive whatever vision I need to receive whatever direction I need to receive.
So, in other words, you don't spend all this. You don't spend all your time in your time management notebook. You actually get about the business of managing your time, so to speak.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, I got you. All right. Is Tim on Wild 2 in Wisconsin? Is he available to come on the bridge and speak with us? What's your question, Tim? If you are there.
Hey, how are you guys doing tonight?
Great show.
Yeah, I know you were talking about human means before, right? I kind of wrote it down a long time ago, but, you know, when we believe, you know, as human means, and honestly, you know, not owe somebody something because you do something nice for somebody.
Right.
It kind of helps you, you know? And another thing I heard a long time ago, we didn't inherit the land from our ancestors. We borrow it from our children. What I see today is destructive, and it's sad to see all the trees cut down, all the animals disappearing, the bees, everything. It's very upsetting to me. And
now, is that original? Did you come up with that yourself? We don't inherit the land from our ancestors. We borrow it from our children. Is that original with you? Did you make that up?
No, that's like an American proverb. It's an Indian proverb.
It's a good one.
I heard it, and it just stuck with me. And it stuck with me for the longest time now. And I look around, and it's nothing but that.
Mm-hmm.
It's build, 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 but we don't replace anything. And sooner or later, Mother Nature is just going to throw it really hard at us.
Yes, well, you might be right about it. Now, do you have a question for William?
Well, I guess we could just kind of answer maybe if you see things getting a little better or something like that. Or
yeah, collectively, do you think there's enough out? Thanks very much for the call, man. Do you see the desire, at least, for the kind of philosophical approach to living that you have, William? Do you see that spreading, and do you think it'll spread fast enough to actually have a positive effect on the world?
Thanks for that statement and question, Tim. John, I do. I'm very, very hopeful. Of course, there's, you know, a lot going on the planet that can give one cause for alarm, concern, despondency. And yet, I really do. I just see so much now, so many people, and it's coming through our whole mythology in the movies that are starting to be made or have been made even for quite a while. And, you know, I do travel extensively. I travel around Africa and Australia and America and you know, whether it's a game ranger out in the bush in Africa or, you know, my neighbors in Australia or people I'm meeting here and reports I'm getting here. And I'm really am aware of a real groundswell in consciousness. And I do think that, you might go, well, we haven't got the numbers. But we have, you know, one person can make such a difference. If you look at Gandhi or Nelson Mandela and the difference that they've made, and there might be billions of people on the planet, but, you know, with a movement of millions of people, which I believe is forming, huge gains can be made, huge progress can be made, a huge transformation can be made. And you know, often times when transformation occurs and change is called for, you know, you really do see things going bad. You do see things falling apart. If you just look at it from an individual perspective, like with my own life that I can use as an example, In my darkest hours, I mean, I believed there was no hope. I believed that I was on my way out. Yet, I had to go down to that bottom. I had to break down, in order for myself, for the phoenix to reemerge and fly again, and that transformation to take place. I couldn't have gone from where I was to being the person I am now and the transformed person I am now without going through a structural breakdown. And, you know, we really are, and I'm passionate about this subject because I envisaged it a long time ago myself personally. I really, way back in time, had a vision of a time when I saw the structures of the world just really collapsing and breaking down. Everything that the financial structures we had, the military structures we had, just the governing structures that we had, the controlling structures we had, all just the health structures, everything just breaking down to be reborn and rebuilt on a foundation that's sustainable for the future, because the course that the human race was on, it might have been a viable one for some time and a logical one, but we've reached the end point of the structures that our lives and societies have been based on, and you know they do have to change, and in order to change, they have to break down, and I'm an optimist. I really believe that when, you know, people that have been going the wrong way, when people have been alcoholics or, you know, whatever it is, where their structure has taken them to the end of the road, there's no just kind of blinding light on the road to Damascus. There has to be some kind of breakdown. And I sincerely believe we're experiencing that now. And that in some way it's a good thing, and that rebirth will come out of this experience. And to answer your question directly, I believe that there is enough of a groundswell of consciousness to, in some way, magically lead that rebirth of humanity.
So you think 2012 may actually hold some illumination for us, some change, some magical shift in our consciousness as a whole? Or
I really do. I was always, you know, really skeptical about this whole 2012 prophecy for a long time, you know, and just, you know, it's just an arbitrary number. But it's astounding how so many things are coming together. And I do believe that this year is going to be the pinnacle of something in some way. And, you know, as they say, Armageddon isn't the end of the world. It actually means the coming of truth. And so 2012 can be some kind of Armageddon, but not in a way where we all wiped off the face of the earth or something like that, but in a way where... it's the death of a certain kind of consciousness. It's the end game of a certain kind of mentality, and you know the beginnings anyway, the rebirth, revitalization of an energy that's required to move us forward, a consciousness that's required to move us forward.
Thanks a lot, William. We've got to go. Go to see his website. It is williamwhitecloud.com, and the rest of it is this. It's your life. It's your fight. Strategies and tactics are available, but in the end, you've got to do it. And by the way, I love you people. Until next Saturday night, and always, be well. And we'll hook up again soon.